Today in our podcast, we're going to be talking about the mindset of leadership and the mindset to lead yourself and to lead others around you. We are drawing from the experience of a man who has served over 24 years in the military, has led over 4 combat tours in Iraq, Afghanistan, Bosnia, and other areas, as well as he served on peacekeeping missions. But the big takeaways in this episode are learning how to set goals with oriented time frames to create the results that you want, as well as pain versus pleasure and how to overcome it. And then also some of the best attributes that make people successful and how we can develop those in our life, as well as how to set expectations for others so that they can come along in the process. And you say, hey, well, Evan, I'm not a leader. Well, you might be a parent. You might be married. And so we can learn how to lead others in and around us by listening to some of these same things that this veteran has served in our country for. You're not going to want to miss the show. Thank you for listening to The Whole Person Mindset. Today, we have David Fivecoats. He's helped enhance the leadership of hundreds of individuals to improve the processes of a dozen companies through experiences like executive coaching, workshops, and other types of leadership retreats. Previously, Colonel Fivecoats served 24 years as an infantry officer. He led men and women during different operations in Kosovo, Bosnia, and through 3 combat tours in Iraq. So after serving our country, he decided to become an executive coach. And so today, David is going to talk to us about how we can develop the mindset of leadership and how we can help develop the mindset of leadership in those that follow us. So David, welcome to the show. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me today. I'm excited to talk to you and your audience.
Well, I'm so glad you came on. And, you know, just kind of a little bit about you is you've served, you know, as we talked about in your intro, in the military for quite a long time. What was that process like for you?
Yeah, so I grew up in Ohio. There really hadn't been anybody in my family that had been in the military, but I love to read military history. And so when it came time to apply to colleges, I applied to West Point, and I got into West Point and decided to go and try it out. Liked it, enjoyed it, had a great experience there, developed some lifelong friends and had a great education, and then went out into the Army as an infantry officer and served for 24 years, like in the intro, 3 tours in Iraq, a tour in Afghanistan, other tours in Bosnia and Kosovo. But along the way, focused on how do I help people become better leaders. And that was always a passion. Also had a passion for how do you develop grit in folks? How do you get folks to accomplish their long-term goals? Because we all have long-term goals, but I'd say the vast majority of us struggle to actually accomplish those long-term goals. So after my time in the Army, I decided I wanted to try to help others. And so I went and worked for another company for a couple of years doing leadership training. And then in March of 2020, I founded my own company that does leadership training and also executive coaching. In July, I published a book called Grow Your Grit, which is based on my experience in the military and then also my experience working with corporate groups about how do you develop grit in yourself and then also grit in your organization if you're a leader of a team or a company.
Well, that kind of goes into the first question really that I have for you is, you know, before you can lead others, you have to learn how to lead yourself. And from the experiences that I've gone through in my own life of failing to lead myself, not only does it take a development of grit, but I have to create a mindset of leadership on how I choose to lead myself. So what are some of the things in your book, I guess, that you talk about in terms of creating the mindset to be able to develop grit or even lead yourself?
Right. Well, you know, I think the first step in, let's talk grit first, and then we can talk leadership second. You know, first, you know, grit is one of those things that you have to understand how it works in yourself before you can try to get others to do it and come together as a team and become a gritty kind of team. I don't know. Have you ever been on a team that you consider, you know, in sports or at work or anything that you consider gritty?
Not really. I was pretty much a wuss the majority of my life and kind of still am. but no, like, well, I mean, nothing to the severity of, you know, military takes tons of grit to do something. You know, I mean, I played childhood sports and stuff, but nothing gritty like that. I mean, for me, the grittiest thing I've ever had to do was, you know, go through college with academic disabilities and still stick it out and succeed.
See, you displayed some grit right there. You know, one of the teams that I like to showcase as an example of grit is the, and I am not a Buffalo Bills fan, but the Buffalo Bills from 1991 to 1994 under Marv Levy go to the Super Bowl four times and get beat every single year. Yeah. Think about the work that the coach Levy has to put in after getting all the way to the Super Bowl and getting that team in the mindset to get themselves all the way back to the Super Bowl that next year. And then the year after, and then finally on the fourth year. Now they had a lot of talent. They had Jim Kelly as the quarterback, Thurman Thomas as the running back. One of my favorite players was Don Beebe, the very fast wide receiver. He sort of exemplifies grit in the Super Bowl. They're down by three touchdowns. Dallas actually sacks the quarterback and strips the ball. Leon Lett picks the ball up and is running towards the end zone. And Don Beebe turns around and streaks down and catches him at like the 3 yard line, knocks the ball out of his hand and the Buffalo Bills get the ball back. But that kind of display of grit and how that organization came together and focused on overcoming the obstacles, you know, of losing the Super Bowl and making it all the way back is really a great story about grit and how do you build grit in a team.
Yeah. So how do you develop grit within yourself?
Yeah. So grit, I think, within ourselves,
the mindset of grit.
Yeah. Yeah. So grit, I define as the will to persevere, to accomplish your long-term goals. And it takes six kind of things to come together for somebody to become gritty. And I think you saw that when you were at college, you first had to have a purpose. Right. Then you had to have a goal. And your goal was, of course, to graduate college. And then you had to have perseverance, resilience, you know, so you bounce back from those inevitable failures. And I'm sure you failed a few tests in there or struggled in a class, and you had to bounce back from that. You had to have some courage to deal with your fears. And I think that one, I enjoyed talking about that one, and we can dig into that one in a little bit. And then finally, you got to figure out where your motivation is coming. Sometimes your motivation may be coming in from an internal source, and other times it might be coming from an extrinsic kind of source. And I've used both to try to accomplish gritty goals.
Yeah.
Just recently, a couple of weeks ago, or actually it was two Sundays ago, I went up to North Georgia. I'm a big bicyclist now. And I did the, it's called the Six Gap Ride, which was 103 miles of bicycle riding and 11,000 feet of climbing. And I had an emotional experience during that time. I got to about mile 80. I was really dragging. I had to stop at a gas station and buy some water and a Coke and just sort of sit there and contemplate life for a little bit and get myself back together and in the right mindset to finish the race. But I finished it. Didn't finish as well as I thought I should have. And so, of course, I'm going to go back again next year and give it another shot and see if I can be successful, even more successful than I was this year.
So you talked about the things, goal, purpose, resilience. What was the thing after that?
You've got to have courage to deal with the fear of failure. And our fears manifest themselves in a variety of different ways. It may manifest with you, it may manifest it in procrastination or hesitancy or unwillingness to risk things. You know, for me, you know, like to go up to do six gaps, I had to risk the fact that I might fail, that I might not make it, and I might, you know, and not do it. But I managed that fear. And, you know, one of the things I did was, you know, that I find super powerful is, if you're having trouble, to take some time, think about all the different things that have you concerned. And for me, it was, you know, what happens if I don't fail, or if I don't make the, you know, don't finish the ride, or if I get in, if I wreck and I get injured. And you list your fears, and then you think about, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen? And then how do I mitigate that risk? How do I make sure that I have at least a strategy to handle that risk? And for me, you know, the not failing or the failing part is largely due when you do that kind of long ride with how much you're eating, because you're on the bike for about 6 hours and you have to do it. And I made some mistakes. I didn't eat enough in the first hour because we were going super fast and it was tough to you know, get that gel out of my jersey and all that. And so, you know, looking back on it, I'm like, okay, I should have done a better job eating, but I'd planned for that. I carried a lot of extra food. I had some ideas where I was going to stop at rest stops and try to refuel and get more water and stuff like that. But anyway. So
I think one of the, when it comes to grit and developing the mindset, is that there's this idea between comfort and challenge or pain versus pleasure. You know, I don't like doing things that are painful or extremely physically challenging, because you could, you know, I mean, I go work out and stuff like that. But, you know, when I think of developing grit, I think of doing things that I don't want to do. And so how does a person go from a sedentary life to really pushing themselves through the process of pain? Because that's really what it is.
Yeah.
Is, you know, to reach a goal, whether it's in business or life or health, there's a process of pain that you're going to have to go through and develop the psychology of wanting to go through that pain. Like, they want the results of it, but they don't want the physical aspect of going through it. Speak to that.
Yeah. One of the more powerful images I like to use to talk to folks about this idea of, you got to go to the discomfort zone. You know, if you're always in your comfort zone and where things are nice and going along well, you're not pushing yourself. When you're not pushing yourself beyond where you are right now in this comfort zone, into the discomfort zone, you're not going to have that growth. You know, when you decided to become a realtor, you know, that, you know, you had to get your license, and then you had to stand up your business. And if nobody came to you to sell their house or buy a house, your business was going to fail. And so you right there went out into the discomfort zone and pushed yourself beyond whatever you were doing before that. I had that same feeling when I stood up my company in 2020, you know, and one of the ways I dealt with that fear was I said, hey, I'm going to do this for a year. And so in March of 2021, I took stock of how it had gone, where my successes were, where were the things that I needed to do better, and said, okay, well, I'll try it for one more year. And so when I get to March of 2022, I'll take another assessment and say, okay, do I continue this company? Because it's a huge risk. And I didn't realize before becoming a small business owner what risks that small business owners like you and I are taking every day. Because if you don't have a client come in the front door, you may not be keeping the lights on for very long. And last year, late summer, I went 45 days without getting a client. And those were some tough nights. You know, it's like, hey, is this thing really going to work? Am I going to make things happen with this or not?
Right. So you've been in the military, you said 24 years. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm retired now.
Yeah, you are retired. From the military. And because you've been to war, golly, what, 6-7 times?
4 times to combat and 2 times to peacekeeping operations. Yeah.
So in terms of, let's just talk about combat, where you've had to lead other people in combat. Yeah. What is the mindset that you've had to develop as a leader through that, and then also help those that you were leading in that process? Because, you know, by second and third and fourth time, you're like a veteran in that, where you're leading people who may not have been there and done that before. And so what are some lessons and stories that you have and have learned through this process?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing, you know, was how do you develop the team? And in each of those instances, So I did the invasion of Iraq in 2003, and then I went back in 2005 to Iraq, and then back again in 07, 08, and then to Afghanistan in 10 and 11. Each time, those organizations that I was part of, you know, lost a whole bunch of people and then brought in a whole bunch of people that had to come together, learn how to operate together, develop the skills, develop the confidence to be able to operate there, and then build the culture of that organization that, hey, when we get into a tough spot, we're going to be okay because we've got this training, we know we're going to persevere, and we've got the skills and abilities to do that. Those couple of things were certainly paramount. Talk a little bit about my time in Afghanistan. Was a battalion commander in Afghanistan. That was about 700 people. We were scattered north to south about across about 100 miles of southeastern Afghanistan, about east to west, about 50 miles of this little province called Paktika. And to bring that team together, because they were, I had four subordinate organizations that were separated by sometimes 20, 25 miles. And each of those guys had to operate and build their team of 130 people together to be an effective force. They had to work with the local government. They had to work with the local police and have a campaign to go after the Taliban and put them on their heels and take the initiative away from them. Some of it is you got to create good processes, and establishing good processes and so stuff works routinely, and those routine things work well. So like when a unit got into contact, we had a routine of how do you get aircraft overhead to help them out in a quick manner, because that was what gave us an advantage over the Taliban, was being able to bring in a helicopter or being able to bring in a fixed wing aircraft as quickly as possible to change what we would call the battlefield calculus and give us the advantage over the Taliban. So those kind of things. So teamwork, culture, and then establishing good processes were the key things that I saw each time in combat, which gave us an edge over the enemy.
What are some of the habits that you've had to develop in life in the military to help you develop leadership and grit?
Yeah, so one of the big ones that I'm a huge fan of habit is making a list, a to-do list, the night before. And so so I have my to-do list right here for today, and it says at 11 o'clock, go on the podcast with you. But that idea of establishing a plan the night before for what you're going to accomplish the next day, I think always gave me an advantage. And having that habit, and I still do it now, you know, almost 30 years later, every night I would make a list of all the things that needed to get done today. And maybe I get into work and I only get one or two of them done, but at least I came into work with a plan of what I was going to try to accomplish. And to me, I think that set me apart from some of my peers who would just show up and react to whatever happened that day and whatever crisis du jour was there. And they didn't ever move any of the longer term things that they wanted to accomplish along, because they didn't schedule it, they didn't have a plan, and they didn't put it on their stuff that they had to get done each and every day before they went home. I think the other thing that it's super helpful is for those that have some problems sleeping and sometimes worry about work the next day. Making the list the night before, to me, really calms me down and puts me in a better place where, hey, I now know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't have to spend all night worrying about it or trying to remember, hey, I got to remember, you know, to bring, you know, those couple pieces of paper in that I was working on last night. For me, establishing that list the night before helps calm me down and gets me a better night's sleep than I would get otherwise.
Yeah. No, I actually do the same thing in terms of a list. It's in my bag, but I've learned for myself that lists help me. And then out of the list, I even make it smaller. What are the three most important things that I have to get done today? And I focus on those three. And then if I accomplish them, then I can move on to other things in the list. But I create a top three. And if I don't get the top three done, I'm not doing anything else.
Yeah. One other thing on goal setting that I think, and I talk about this to folks that are interested in building their individual grit, because goal setting is a big part of it. I think a lot of people fail with their goal setting because they don't, first off, you've got to define your goal right. And your goal needs to at least be specific, measurable, and some sort of time bound on it, some time aspect. So you have those big three things when you're creating big goals. Those are the three really important things to make sure that your goal has. Then once you do that, then you've got to sort of go, okay, I've got this big lofty goal, like, hey, I'm going to stand up a company, or I'm going to write a book. And for me, this last year was writing a book. And so I had to take that big idea of, hey, I'm going to write a book, and then I need to break it down into smaller pieces. And I think a lot of folks fail because they just leave it as that big kind of thing of, hey, write a book. And that seems super big, and it's super hard to get into every day because it's just this, yeah, it's just a huge weight on you. And so if you break it down into, okay, I'm going to figure, look for pictures on it, or I'm going to design the cover, or I'm going to find an editor, or I'm going to find the guy that's going to help me index it, or I'm going to send it out to a couple of readers, and break it down into smaller chunks, then those are more manageable that help get you to that long range goal. And I think a lot of people fail to do that with life. They may do it at work, but they sometimes fail to do it with their own life. And then the last part is budgeting time on the calendar to actually get that done. How many times have you said, hey, I'm going to work out, and that's that big lofty goal. It's not specific, so you haven't defined it at all, but you just say, hey, I'm going to work out because I want to get in better shape. And you don't break it down into smaller pieces like, hey, I'm going to run Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I'm going to go to the gym Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then go, okay, every day I'm going to block on the calendar from 6 to 7 in the morning because nobody's up and it doesn't impact my time with the kids and my time with my spouse. And I'm going to go do that. And those kind of second and third steps, once you set a goal, really set you up for a much greater chance of being successful at actually moving towards that goal and accomplishing it.
Well, and I really like what you said, making small steps, and not just small steps, but doing them consistently is the next thing. Because I mean, I can't tell you how many times in the past I'd go work out for 2 to 3 hours, but I'd only do it once or twice a week, And when I was trying to do it every single, there's about 3 weeks where I was working out 2 hours a day, and someone came up to me once like, what if you just did, and because I was doing it 3 days a week, what if you did 30 minutes or 45 minutes per workout, but you just did it 5 or 6 days a week? Because you'd see better results than just doing 2 hours 3 times a week.
Yeah.
I was just like, huh, that is true.
One of the big things on that same line with folks working out or trying to tackle big projects or big goals, I think sometimes we're too hard on ourselves and we say, hey, we've got to have that 2-hour workout for it to be a good workout. And I encourage folks to change their mindset and say, okay, I'm going to commit 10 minutes a day to this. And a lot of times, if you say, okay, I'm going to work out 10 minutes a day, there's no way, even if you're the busiest CEO, you're running Apple or Microsoft or anything or Starbucks, you can find 10 minutes a day to work out. And that's okay. If you just get that 10 minutes a day, it's better than nothing. It's better than sitting in your chair all day and going to meetings and doing that. But if you get that 10 minutes a day, sometimes those 10 minutes will change into 30 minutes or 45 minutes because, hey, you're going to be like, hey, I'm already on the elliptical, I'm sweaty, I'll just keep going because this feels good. But you set the benchmark of, hey, I'm going to do 10 to 15 minutes on this. And that gets you over the hump of having to have this, fantastic 2-hour workout or 2 hours of work on your big project or whatever. So,
and along that lines, like I asked myself this question the other day. I'm only 33, but my body is like, dude, it, like just things hurt. It's sore, And I'm 33. And then I thought to myself, well, what if I just spent 10 minutes or 15 minutes a day stretching?
Yeah.
That's it. Like, and if the results of stretching are more, I'm more limber, which means less pain from, you know, a kid sideswiping me or, you know, stepping off the curb funny. You know, think about how 10 to 15 minutes a day will produce far better results in other areas. Like, for example, dude, I got charged at by a donkey 2.5 weeks ago when I was showing property. And I had to jump over a cattle gate to get away from it so it wouldn't hit me. I did not make it over that. Well, I did make it over the cattle gate. I just didn't clear. I hit the top of that sucker. I flipped over, landed on my head, next side area. And I somehow sprained my ankle when I never landed on my feet. I don't quite understand that. But it's 2 weeks later, and I'm still having issues with my ankle.
Yeah.
And it blows me away. Like, it wasn't that severe of, like, I went to the chiropractor 3 times and doing better, but still, like, that one incident has really impacted the last 2 weeks of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what could I have been doing before that?
Yeah.
That would have allowed me to take that hit and recover better. And I think so many times in life that we play, like you said, reactionary, where, you know, we don't plan our day. So we take that hit and we react. You know, where at in our lives are we reacting? And it's actually harder for us because we didn't take time in advance to prepare or plan.
Yeah.
And so what are some habits that you have recognized in your life and other people's lives, or even mindsets that help people grow and overcome and be successful?
Yeah, well, actually, let me talk about your donkey piece first, and then I'll come back to that. A wonderful workout.
And that's why they call them jackasses, by the way. They are mean. Like, no, I'm not kidding. They are mean. This isn't the first time it's happened by a donkey either. This is the third.
I didn't know that was a part of the hazard piece with real estate agents, you know, avoiding donkey charges.
Yeah, dude, this is the third time showing property over like 10 years. It's crazy.
So a super easy workout that folks can do anywhere. 3 sets of 10 push-ups, 3 sets of whatever your favorite ab exercise is, 3 sets of 5 air squats, and 3 sets of 30-second planks. And those 4 exercises together, along with a little bit of stretching, that constitutes my 10 to 15 minute workout. And like this morning, I did it when I got back after I walked my dog. And I just did that. And I'm okay if I don't get anything else in the rest of the day. But it, you know, those things, you know, it's going to work your shoulders, it's going to work your abs, it's going to work your core, and it's going to work your legs. And those 4 things, you know, you can do them anywhere because it doesn't require any weights. You know, I laid right down on the floor behind me and did the quick sets. It's 12 sets total plus some stretching. Easy to do, and hopefully makes you more resilient, so you are able to clear those cattle gates in a single bound. Or if you happen to clip it, your muscles are in a better shape, so you come back and recover faster.
Right.
Yeah. So other mindsets to stay out in front and grow. I think the big one is reading. I like to say leaders are readers. And the idea, I always have a book that I'm reading. Right now I'm reading Thinking in Bets by Annie Duke, who was a poker player. And trying to think about how do you make better decisions. And she also almost got a PhD in psychology before she became a professional poker player. But her idea is that if you think in bets and think in percentages, it causes us to make a better decision than if it's sort of a binary kind of decision.
Interesting.
I found it interesting, and I think there's some goodness out of it. And I'm about 40 pages from the end. And so the other thing I do now with books after I got out of the Army is when I read the book, I dog ear corners of stuff that I like. And then I try to go back and write any of the good quotes in the front cover of the book. It helps me to remember it. It helps me when I'm talking to others about the book to remember what were the key points. And then if somebody brings up, hey, did you read The Culture Code last year? And I like, oh yeah, I read it. I can go back and look at my notes and go, oh, here's the, you know, 15 or 20 good things that I took away from it. And it's always in the cover of your book. You don't have to look for it someplace else. And it helps you remember those key things that you found, you know, impactful while you're reading the books. But those two things, I think, help us grow as people. Reading, because you get other experiences from other folks, and then figuring out a note-taking system on how do you help yourself remember that stuff a little bit better.
So I'm going to bring up a man who's probably one of the greatest leaders that has never gotten credit for it. Okay. Mm-hmm. We give him credit for a lot of other things, but not for leadership. Tom Brady. That dude knows how to win, and he elevates everyone around him. And he's done that for over 20 years in sports and on two different teams now. The longest franchise, or I shouldn't say franchise, But in football, typically the longest franchise legacy winning team is around 7 years. Like,
yeah,
typically a team like you, maybe you can get 7 years and like, that's the best, but Tom has had it for over 20 years. And he's been to over 50% of the Super Bowls over the past 20 years, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And what impresses me is his ability to raise up other individuals' expectations and abilities around him. So how do we go about in our families and in our lives and even in our careers, raise other people's ability around us?
So, it's, Tom, of course, works with a coach. First it was Bill Belichick, and now is it Gruden?
Arians.
Oh, Bruce Arians is the Buccaneers coach. And so between the two of them, you know, they create, you know, they figure out the purpose of the organization. And that is one of those things that has to be over-communicated to the team. Hey, what's our why? What is it, you know, and for them, it may be to, you know, win the Super Bowl or be the best team that they possibly can be. I don't know exactly what the Buccaneers' why is, but something like that. And then they have a goal. Their goal is probably to get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. And then they build a plan based on that goal. Bringing folks to align around a purpose or a why is incredibly powerful. And that, I think, is one of those things that I think Brady does very well is he gets the team all on board. You know, I'm more familiar with him with the Patriots and how they would always find these undersized receivers, you know, from Edelman. Welker. You know, they always found these guys that everybody else had overlooked, but somehow they become an integral part of the Patriots system and would have fantastic years there. And so I think, you know, vision, and then over communicating that purpose with that why is really the first step. I think the other piece is, I suspect that Tom helps inculcate a culture of success or a culture of high expectations of the organization. You know, what's really important to them? You know, where do they set the standard? What do they tolerate, not tolerate in the locker room or on the practice field? Those kind of things between the culture and this purpose, I think, are the two big things that help elevate those teams around Tom Brady.
Right. Now, for you, having, a lot of experience in military and in wartime, what's one of the biggest lessons that you've learned through the process?
So one of the tougher things I found, and I'll talk about it on the corporate side, is it takes some very tough intellectual work to figure out your organization's purpose. and to find a purpose that actually resonates with, you're not going to get 100%, but resonates with a majority of the team or the group or the company. And it takes, it really works best in a group. You know, it's not something that the CEO goes off on his own and figures it out and then sort of brings it back and releases it to the group and says, this is our purpose. The CEO is definitely the catalyst of it and has to shepherd the group along. But unless he's bringing in the entire group, he's not going to get buy-in and he's not going to get the group to do it. Now, I saw that with our preparations to go to Afghanistan as well. We had a group that had just gotten back from Iraq. They'd been very successful in Iraq, but half the group left. And so we had to very quickly build a culture and get folks aligned around this purpose, which was to increase the safety and security of the Paktika province and align them around that purpose. So they were in the right mindset and we were all rowing in the same direction and folks could be empowered to act without asking me.
That's good. Last question here in terms of the podcast before I go into the same questions I always ask. Again, there's moments where we are uninspired to do things or life has punched us in the face and it's hard to get back up. Here's another Tom Brady reference. When they were playing Atlanta in the Super Bowl and Atlanta was winning by like 23 or 24 points. And I think the Patriots only had like, I think it was 0 to 3 points at the time. And they came back in the third and fourth quarter to win the whole thing. And a lot of people, when they're down, it's easy to become uninspired. How do you go from feeling uninspired to doing what needs to get done so that you can have success?
Now you're driving a stake into the heart of all the Atlanta Falcons fans out there that thought they were going to win their first Super Bowl. And being here in Georgia, I'm very aware of that. But how do you, how do you pick yourself up and dust yourself off when life is inevitably going to give you a setback or two? And I think the first piece is, us as people, there is a certain amount of, hey, I've got to be getting the right amount of sleep, the right nutrition. I got to be working out and I've got to be practicing some sort of mindfulness. And those things come together. For me, it's certainly a lot harder when you get a setback. And for me, at least when I've gotten 5 hours of sleep versus 7 or 8, when you get thrown a wrench, it's much tougher to come back and be optimistic and say, hey, we'll overcome this. We'll figure a way around it. We'll put our nose to the grindstone. For me at least, when I'm not sleeping very well, then my nutrition sort of suffers because I don't have the same amount of willpower and I'm eating, not as healthy. Then you may skip the workout and, it all sort of snowballs and has this snowball effect. Mindfulness also, a lot of times we practice mindfulness when we're on our ups, but we don't practice it when we're on the downs. And that's probably where we need it more. And for me, I've had a mindfulness practice, but I'm not as good at it as I should be. And there are days where I don't refocus it and try to get myself, the great book that I really enjoy is the 10% happier book on mindfulness and make yourself 10% better, by, practicing a little bit of mindfulness. All those things come together, in getting yourself in the right space helps you handle whatever life is going to throw at you and knock you down, and Tom Brady, of course, he's got, he's famous for his TB12 and all the stuff that he's doing. I'm certain that helped him remain optimistic when it appeared like the game was out of reach. The other thing he was able to do was reach back and go, okay, I've played this game for, 15 or 20 years at that point in time. And I've led comebacks before, And I think we can lead a comeback here. And when you get that going and you get that momentum going, and all of a sudden you can turn the momentum from the Falcons to the Patriots, he can start getting that going. I think those things are helpful to sort of inspire us to think back to some times we were successful, and then also make sure that we're getting enough sleep, we're eating well, we're getting some physical fitness in, and we're practicing mindfulness. Can all help us overcome things when bounce back from adversity.
Awesome. David, thank you so much for coming on to the show today. So appreciate you joining us. How can people follow you?
Well, thanks. So I have a website, thefivecoatconsultinggroup.com. It'll also show up if you Google TFCG. I blog twice a week on leadership topics. On there Mondays and Thursdays. They're also cross-posted on LinkedIn, so you can find me or TFCG on LinkedIn. If you're interested in purchasing the book's available on Amazon and Kindle, paperback and hardback. The book is called Grow Your Grit, and it's been out there since July. We've had 11 five-star reviews so far. And if you really like it, please throw another review up. Or if you don't like it, throw a review up, and that way I can make it better the next time I decide to write a book.
Awesome. David, thank you so much for coming on to the show today. Have a great day.
You too.